Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and today I would like to welcome Sherry all the way from Italy.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. Very, very well. It's actually 2 a.m.
Wow.
So I'm not quite as perky as I often am when I'm there with you at 5 p.m. in California, but it's great to hear your voice.
It's great to hear yours also. Yeah, it's wonderful to be back on the air live again.
Yes, I understand we're going to be back live on the air for a while now.
That's right.
Same time, same station.
Same time, same station, every Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. We're at 90.1 on the FM dial in the Bay Area, and on the Internet, you can pick us up by going to kzsu.org. And Sherry, as you know, we have archives of today's show and all of our previous shows at sherryhuber.com.
Yes. In fact, I'm on retreat here in Tuscany with a gentleman from Rome, and that's how he tunes into our shows.
Oh, wonderful. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how many of them are out there tuning us in?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. People around the world.
Absolutely.
Very exciting.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to join our conversation today and talk with Sherry, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 650-723-9010. So feel free to pick up the phone and give us a call. Sherry, I wanted to invite you to tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Well, having a very good time, I can tell you that, eating a lot of good food in Italy.
Yes.
We're here at a Agriturismo. It's an old farmhouse, very old farmhouse. Parts of it are about 1,000 years old.
Wow.
And it is a working farm. It had fallen into quite a state of disrepair before the current folks got a hold of it and began to bring it back. In fact, its last incarnation was as a pig farm, and the house was the barn. And,
wow!
So they've restored it. It's quite beautiful, and it's about. Well, it's a little ways outside of Siena, and a half hour from Siena and about an hour from Florence. And so we get up every morning and we do yoga and or somatic movement and yoga and have meditation and breakfast. And then often in the afternoons, sometimes all day, we take off and visit one of these beautiful places. We've been to San Gimignano and Siena and Florence, and then we come back in the afternoon and have another yoga class and meditation and then group discussion. Then we have a late Italian dinner, which is the way it's done here. We're actually still a little early because we usually eat about 8:30.
Yes.
And today we had what I consider to be the best trip of all. We went to Assisi.
Uh-huh.
Spent the day there.
Wow.
And, it was quite stunning. It was fun. As you know, I have a tremendous fondness for Assisi.
Uh-huh.
And I was eager to see how other people would respond to it. So we've gone to all these very beautiful, very famous places. And we were supposed to go to Assisi yesterday and San Gimignano today, but it rained yesterday, and we're actually about 2 hours away from Assisi, so we decided to switch and go to San Gimignano yesterday afternoon and Assisi today.
Uh-huh.
And so we had done all of this, you know, traveling around to these famous places, and then I took them to Assisi, and it was kind of with a little, sort of like introducing your child, you know.
Yes.
Will they like it? Will they not like it?
Yes.
And people loved it.
Wow.
It's such a... you know, people would ask me, "What do you like so much about it? You know, what do you do? Where do you go when you're here?" And what I try to explain to them is, to me, the whole city is holy, and there's just a holy feel to it. You can just walk anywhere in the town, and the whole town feels different from any place else. And by the end of the day, people were saying, "Yes, it's true. It's just different. It doesn't feel touristy. It's not busy. People are not people are just kind of quiet, and they're, for the most part, there to have an experience of St. Francis.
Yes.
And so it was a glorious day.
Yes.
Yeah. And then this was the last evening of our retreat, so we had our final, you know, closing things, and then people will get on their planes and trains tomorrow and take off across the world.
Wow.
It's been glorious, and I hope everybody who has even the vaguest passing interest in doing such a thing will come and join us for something like this, because it's a very different way to practice. You know, it's not our traditional silent retreat, and it's not being on retreat. It's somewhere in between.
Uh-huh.
And what people talked about was the feeling of sangha and safety, that kind of privileged environment, and within that privileged environment, doing very kind of normal, regular, everyday things, going around in the world and being a tourist and shopping, and but within a context of a retreat, and it's been very fun.
Wow. Sounds great.
Yeah.
And Sherry, for people who haven't heard the word sangha before, can you provide a little background on that?
Yeah. So what the Buddha taught was that there are three aspects of practice. They're often referred to as three facets of a jewel. One is bodhi, which is awakening or enlightenment. Dharma is the teaching, the practice, and sangha, the people who practice together. So in the strictest sense of the word, it's those of us who are in this practice, who meditate together. And then in a broader sense, it's everyone who is on a path of awakening. And as my teacher was fond of pointing out, that's everybody.
Yes.
Whether we know it or not, we're on a path of awakening.
Uh-huh.
So there were people here who do the kind of awareness practice that we do. And then there were people from all different walks of life. Many people who meditated, not many, but a couple of people who meditated for the first time this week.
Uh-huh.
A couple of people who had never done any kind of yoga or somatics or Pilates. And yet, within the context of the retreat, we're all sangha, because we're all doing this process, this practice together.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Sounds very exciting.
It's very fun. It's very fun.
Yes.
And we are playing with an idea. Is this a good time to tell you about it?
Please, certainly.
All right. So I have been, I don't know if you know this, but one of the very first things that we did when we started the Zen Center over 20 years ago now was to create decals, window decals for cars and
uh-huh.
bumper stickers and a T-shirt and that sort of thing that said Inner Peace, World Peace.
Yes.
And that's, of course, a big focus of what we do, that bring peace to the world is a one person at a time sort of an operation. And as we transform ourselves and get to a more peaceful place inside, then that's what we bring to the world. And the message that St. Francis brought to the world was peace and good.
Uh-huh.
Those were the values that he lived and that he taught, and that's very much the feeling of being in Assisi. So peace is it's just huge in Assisi. Peace, Assisi, kind of the same thing.
Yes.
And so while I have been there, not just during this retreat, but I've been there on this trip, I've spent quite a lot of time once again in Assisi because it is my favorite place on the planet. It occurred to me that I would like to be a part of creating a center in Assisi that would be devoted to peace, and
uh-huh.
Where we would invite people from all over the world to bring their vision and practice of peace and have it represented in this one place, so that people from all over the world can come and experience other people's demonstration of peace or approach to peace.
Yes.
And so we've actually, while we were on this trip, found the building.
Wow.
And now the people are who are on this retreat are actually, several of them are coming back committed to furthering this idea.
Wow.
So we've come up with quite the ambitious vision here in Assisi to have what we're calling the working title is the International Ecumenical Peace Center.
Great.
In Assisi. So get ready for that. We're going to hear lots more about it as time goes on.
Wonderful. No wasting time there, huh?
That's right.
Why not get started?
Why not get started? Exactly. And, of course, it's a perfect, it's a perfect spot from which to start a trip to Africa.
Absolutely.
It all works together very well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Sherry, we have a caller on the line here.
Excellent.
I'd like to welcome Claire from Palo Alto. You're on open air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Michael. Hello,
hi,
Sherry.
Claire.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Sherry in Italy. That's wonderful.
Yes. We're so international here, aren't we?
Indeed, indeed. So I have a little question about overwhelm. I've been studying of late. My experience of being overwhelmed, especially at work, and noticing what goes on for me. And I notice that I often feel overwhelmed after I've had some of my a boundary violated. And
Can you describe what that looks like?
Oh, so for instance, I'm working away at something, and somebody will come and say that they want something from me, and I will say that I don't have any time. And then the person will insist or ask in a different way. And then I notice that within me there's a part of me that thinks I should be more willing to, give attention to this person. So then I don't insist on my boundary that it's not a good time, and I give my attention to this person. So I seem to have an internal battle between when is it right to say no and when should I be flexible and be in the moment with what is happening.
And how does the overwhelm fit in? Are you overwhelmed by one more demand or overwhelmed by your reaction to the situation?
Yeah, I get overwhelmed by my reaction. Internally, then, I have all this stuff about, I'm not getting my work done, and there's a part of me, then, that just wants to, I guess, really angry with myself, and then I want to, just give up on everything, and, when I notice my internal, what happens internally with regard to overwhelm, I feel really overwhelmed. Because it's there's so much goes on inside, too, with me around it.
Yes, And once again, that's what's overwhelming, is all this stuff that's going on inside. Mm-hmm. So does it feel like you work, that you operate pretty close to the edge? In other words, if we checked in with you 30 seconds before this person came into the room to make this request of you, would you be kind of operating at a high vibration, kind of high stress, a nerve ending, waiting for somebody to touch it?
Oh, not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. So it feels like you're fairly calm and relaxed.
Well, it feels like I have a lot to do and that I'm trying to get a lot done. So let's be honest here and check in. At work at the moment, I feel like I have a lot to do, and so I have an agenda of being busy and trying to achieve and be focused. So I would not say that I was calm and relaxed.
Yeah. So you're just kind of barely keeping it together. You're pushing yourself kind of as hard and as fast as you can.
Yeah, I'm pushing myself to get things done.
Yeah. And then somebody comes in, and they're the proverbial straw. Right, that's too much. Now I've crossed a line, and this is just too much.
So this is one more thing. And, yeah.
Yeah. one more thing, and I can't deal with one more thing. I'm already maxed out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then the voices kick in, that there's something wrong with you for being this way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I should be able to cope with everything, that I should be more willing to deal with the requests that happen in the moment.
Right. But what isn't suggested is that perhaps taking better care of yourself along would put you in a much better position to be receptive to someone else's request. Right? It's, you should be being pushed as hard as you can be pushed, and you should still be generous. That's what the voices would like you to believe.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, if you saw that happening to somebody else, would you agree with that theory? That they should be being pushed that hard and still be generous?
I would encourage them to be kinder and gentler with themselves.
Mm-hmm. Good advice, huh? Yeah. But it's hard for us when it's ourselves. Very hard.
Sure.
Yeah. So that would be my encouragement. Mm-hmm. That if you're, you know, you're operating at about 98% of capacity, or maybe, you know, 103% of capacity, and to kind of back that off to about 80% so that you're getting a lot done, you're being very effective and efficient, and you still have a little buffer zone there, a little generosity zone.
Yes, which is a much kinder way of being with myself too.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the other, as we know, is just a setup for what you're getting out of this, which is the punishment. So you're working really, really, really hard, and your reward is getting beaten up because you're not willing to be interrupted by somebody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a lousy reward for working really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, do you think that your internal mechanisms will be able to let you do that, work at 80%, so that you have that other 20% to give to your colleagues?
When you said that, I noticed that there was a voice in me that said, but I can possibly do that.
Right.
I have so much to do, and what are people going to think? And
yeah. Well, one thing they'll think is that you're a lot nicer.
Oh, and a part of me took offense at that. I thought I'm quite nice as I am. Thank you. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the voices don't want to present that, right? They don't like that view of things.
That I'm not nice?
Yeah. Well,
sure.
The voice, you know, that's not a part of the picture, right? You're supposed to be going along, working at 103%, and somebody comes in, and you're perfectly charming, and inside you're going crazy, but of course they never know,
mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's often the case that other people are not nearly as fooled as we are. Just something to consider.
Something to consider. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And can I ask one other little thing about boundaries? Because I tend to be a pleasing type personality who wishes to give and to, you know, work with people.
Uh-huh.
And I'm noticing that I do have a challenge of, you know, saying no and working with firm boundaries. That I think is important for me.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then there's this other part, there's this voice that says, but you shouldn't be that way.
Exactly, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm more flowing and giving and helping and willing. And
uh-huh. And you, of course, could give your whole day away that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then at the end, the beating would be about not getting anything done or not getting enough done.
Oh, yeah, enough of my work done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can't win in this, can you?
No.
Listening to those voices in your head, there's no way you're ever going to get it right.
Uh-huh.
Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah. So then it becomes a matter of looking at what really would work for you. And is there a way that you can set up certain times where you would be available to people if they need you, and other times where you're not available to people? And which takes a lot of conscious awareness and discipline. Yeah.
Thank you for that. That's good.
Yeah. Let us know, huh?
Yeah, I appreciate the show and your presence. Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you.
Okay. Goodbye, Sherry.
Bye.
Bye, Michael.
Bye, Claire. Thanks for calling, Claire. Sherry, it's interesting to me how, as you were talking with Claire, that you get to a situation where you can't win. Because the voices tell you, you need to be this way, you need to be really efficient. And then when somebody else comes along and makes a request, you have to be kind and generous and charming and all of that also.
Yes, and when you're helping them, you're taking away from your work, so then you have to be chastised, criticized for that.
Absolutely.
And, it's just, we just keep turning down these paths that go nowhere.
Absolutely.
So the bottom line of this is, it is not helpful to listen to voices inside our heads that are telling us how we should be that is different from the way that we are. It's just not helpful.
So we shouldn't listen to voices in our head that tell us how to be different from how we actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we can listen to them if we don't believe them. But if listening to them is going to cause us to believe them, then it's best not to listen to them.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, if you had an external person in your life, you're going along and you're trying to do the best that you can do and you're working as hard as you can work, and this person is saying, well, you know, they're just criticizing you. You know, well, why aren't you getting more done? Why aren't you being more effective? You know, I think you could work a lot harder. I think, you know, you're not really trying to. And, you know, you can get that feeling of the, you know, running faster and faster and faster on that wheel. And then somebody comes in and disturbs you, and the voices are saying, you know, well, you don't... other person is saying, you know, you don't have time to be interrupted like this. You need to get your work done.
Yes.
And so you get rid of the person, and your helpful colleague is saying, well, that's no way to treat people. Why can't you be kinder? Why, you know, how long would that go on before we would say, go away?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, this is not beneficial to anybody. But when the voice is going on inside our heads, we believe it.
Absolutely. And to quote from one of your books, Sherry, if the voice is not speaking to you with compassion, whether that's internally or externally, don't listen to it.
Don't listen to it. It has nothing to offer you. And, and we're conditioned to be afraid of just cutting loose that voice that's there, offering us nothing but suffering.
Absolutely.
We're afraid to be without it. But what if it's giving me good information? What if I need to know this? What if that voice weren't there, then maybe I would be really rude to people, or maybe I would not get my work done, or whatever. You know, I would fail in life if that voice weren't there constantly criticizing me and beating me up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the answer to that is no. That voice is not helpful.
Yes.
It is just not adding anything to our lives except suffering.
Yes, yes. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Wonderful.
And I'd like to mention the phone number again. That's 650-723-9010 if you'd like to join our conversation today. And I'd also like to mention that at 6 p.m. we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. She plays great world music. And then a new program, CW, at 8 p.m. So stay tuned for that at KZSU Stanford. And now I'd like to welcome Celia from Seattle. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Michael.
Hi, Celia.
Hello there.
I'm calling about, I believe it was last week you gave homework. And I don't know if I've got my shows mixed up or something, but... If it wasn't last week, it was some week, you gave the homework to pick a habit or something that somebody does that you don't like, that you find irritating.
Oh.
And that's a
good one.
Use that as a bridge to the person instead of as a wall between the two of you.
Aha. Uh-huh. And how did you do with that?
Well, it was a very, it was really a wonderful experience. I decided to use something that my husband does, which is he complains about pains in his body a lot, and particularly about his feet.
His feet?
His feet.
Uh-huh.
And he likes to walk a lot, and so almost every morning and maybe other times during the day, he'll say, oh, no, this is terrible. Now I've got a blister. Oh, no, this is terrible. These shoes don't fit right. And he can go on for a good long time like that. And so, yeah, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said something.
No, no, I was just, I confess I was chuckling.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I started to do after I started to think of it in your way, too. But, so, I started to think, okay. Oh, and another thing you said was that you're only seeing what you have inside yourself.
Hmm.
So I was looking at this habit of his about complaining, and I was saying to myself, but I don't complain. And then I said to myself, well, you know, Sherry seems to have said some very good things over the time I've been listening. Maybe she's right here, too. So then I go a little farther. Well, and then I go, no, I don't complain. And finally I said, that's the point. I don't complain.
Uh-huh.
It was this huge window that opened up or something. And I just saw back through my whole life, taking on a kind of sanctimonious air because I wasn't complaining.
Yeah. Yeah, out loud.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the primary difference, right? He complains out loud, you complain inside.
Well, I didn't think I was complaining inside either.
Uh-huh. Although you did notice how annoying he was with this complaining business.
Right.
Yeah. Do you see what I'm pointing at? That you were complaining about him complaining.
Oh, God, I missed that one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's just it, right? So that's number one. We don't hear it when it's ourselves because I'm not complaining. This is just, I'm just telling you how it is.
Right.
Yeah. And then the next piece of it, which is so significant, which is you would like to complain, but you don't allow yourself to complain.
Right.
Yeah, because that's, I imagine, the right good person thing to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which, of course, would make his complaining just hideous for you, because the right people don't complain. And look at the amount of energy you put into not complaining. And there he is just complaining.
So he's not a right person either.
Not in that world.
No.
Yeah. No, not in... No, he's really not a right person in that world. He's doing it as wrong as it can get.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then he's your husband, for heaven's sake.
That's right, and I married him.
That's right.
I chose him.
Yeah, you married a complainer.
Yeah. It's really bad.
Yeah, how bad
down
is that?
Down the road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, where are you going to go with that one? Start complaining?
Well, I actually have let myself complain a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very interesting because it's changed the family dynamic a little bit.
Uh-huh. Can you say more about that?
Well, I complained to my teenage daughter about something. Actually, I didn't even complain. I was just a little grumpy. It wasn't anything she did. I was just kind of getting ready to do something, and I was kind of not my... in every way I could self.
Mm-hmm.
And she found it upsetting.
Yeah, what's wrong with Mom?
Yeah. So I found that really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was, you said to use the habit as a bridge. And when I was thinking of it that way with my husband, it was this tremendous relief to me that this thing that I had been, you know, dissing so much, it was like I could like him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then I have something wrong with my foot.
Uh-huh. And you could actually talk about it.
Yeah. So I said to him, honey, let's exchange fit reports. Anyway, it was pretty amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So it did work as a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm worried that I'll use this as another sanctimonious way of being.
Well, if you do, then you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we don't have to worry about that kind of thing. We see things when we're ready to see them. Yeah. It's all happening in its own good time. What I would be more concerned about is being worried about how I'm going to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've had this clarity. You stepped free of this. What used to be a wall between you and your husband is now a bridge. You have a communication, a sympathy, an understanding, and then that old conditioned mind comes in and says, well, yeah, but what if I... And you're right back out there again, traveling around in a world that doesn't actually exist. Might as well just stay here, enjoying this connection with your husband, and when there's something else for you to see, you'll see it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Sherry.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Celia. Sherry, it's interesting to me. I confess I did the homework also. And looking at that projection piece and trying to own something that I can't really see was a challenge.
Uh-huh.
Took a while to sort of look and see, you know, how do I do this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what did you see?
Well, I was... It was... trying to see this quality that I had projected onto someone else and couldn't see in myself. And then it takes a while to sort of be open to that.
Mm-hmm.
And to see how I am that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, we can always take the shortcut of asking other people in our lives
yes.
to point out to us how and when we're being that way.
Yes.
But sometimes we would rather figure it out on our own
right.
and take that drastic route.
Yes, and I remember you had suggested that in the show that Celia was referring to in
uh-huh.
that homework of finding someone who pretty much loves us unconditionally, you know, and asking them if they could gently tell us how we are this way that we
mm-hmm.
don't see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
When we really want to end suffering more than we want to look good or be right, then we're eager for the information no matter how it comes to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because I am this way and it is causing me to suffer.
Yes.
I really want an alternative to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So go ahead and lay it on me.
Yes.
Now, what do you see?
Yes. It seems to me that when I get to the place where I'm not afraid of bad information, then that's a good place.
Yes. Actually, when you get to that, you're already where you want to be.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Let me give the phone number again. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call at 650-723-9010. Sherry, did you have something else to add there?
Oh, no, it's just that was good homework, wasn't it? And I always chuckle at myself because you know me well enough to know that I have absolutely no memory. And whenever these things come up, it's always brand new.
Absolutely.
So I actually have no memory of us giving that homework or talking about it. And then when the conversation will come around and I'll say exactly the same thing that I said before, apparently. And I always chuckle about that because it's so brand new.
Yes.
How could we have had this conversation before?
Yes.
It's one of the joys and one of the difficulties of living in the moment. It's kind of like being senile. You know,
you're right.
Yeah, be saying the same thing over and over and over and think it's just brand new and fresh every time.
Well, at least you have a lot of energy when you say it that way.
Right. Well, yeah. And so it's, you know, it's either being in the moment or losing one's mind.
Great. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 650-723-9010. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. Lots of great world music there. Sherry, we had a question that came in during our pre-recorded show last week.
Mm.
And I'd like to share that with you. This gentleman called in, and he was talking about the climate of post-9/11 and the sort of economic downturn that we've been experiencing. And what he was sharing is that a feeling of when someone praises him in some interaction, he feels the same feelings of the heart racing, like someone's going to attack me.
Hmm.
And he went on to say that there's a sense that every interaction that he has is fear-based in some sense.
Uh-huh.
So everything triggers that fear reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it was almost independent of what the content was.
So the constant is interaction.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me the constant is this fear.
Right, but the feeling is not there until he encounters another human being.
Yes.
And then whatever the nature of the interaction with the other human being, he has this, what's labeled a fear reaction.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And so he's looking at...
just exploring that and seeing, you know, seeing what that's about and what's behind that.
Uh-huh.
And as I was reading it, it occurred to me some of the stuff that you've been talking about in terms of generalized anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And, which, yeah.
You know,
a personal favorite of mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if I have a particularly sensitive system, then I might have a physical reaction to being around another human being.
Yes.
Just feeling the energy of that person.
Yes.
Could conceivably give me this experience that would feel like anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be really interesting for this person to talk. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with the story of the nun who goes to town and comes back with the snakes crawling all over her.
I am not.
Ah, well, it was a difficult case, and so she went away to town to do the shopping, and she was perfectly normal. But when she came back, she was hysterical, and she said that there were snakes crawling all over her body.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine how upsetting that would be. And so they put her in her room and put her in bed, and they called the doctor, and The doctor said, well, I don't know, you know, I could give her something to calm her down, but I mean, this is really not my field. So they called the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist came and said, well, you know, this is very, very difficult. We can certainly give her some medication that will help with these delusions. Then they called the Zen master. When all else fails. And the Zen master had a little consultation and said to the nun, all right, now I am going to be away. I won't be back for 2 weeks. And in this time that I'm going to be gone, I want you to do two things. I want you to pay very close attention to these snakes. I want you to watch very carefully and closely everything about them. How long are they? How wide are they? What color are they? Where exactly are they? How do they move? What are the patterns? Everything about every single one of them. And I don't want you to mention them to a soul. Okay? When the 2 weeks had passed, the snakes were gone. All right? And the expression that we have in Zen that covers that is, nothing can stand up under scrutiny.
Uh-huh.
So all of these things in our lives that trouble us are maintained through a lack of attention. We're afraid. We don't want to look. We don't want to get that involved. We're always hoping that things will go away.
Yes.
And then when they go away, we're hoping that they won't come back.
Yes.
Rather than being really interested in, what is this? What's going on?
Yes.
Why is this happening with me? What is this? That kind of detective,
yes,
sort of an attitude that we could have, given the fact that we are human beings and this is our one great opportunity to experience life.
Yes.
And what we do instead of joyfully running into it the way we used to do when we were a couple of years old, we're just wanting it to go away and not be hard and not be challenging and,
yes,
and don't upset me and can we just have it calm and nothing happen and like that, and then we wonder why we're bored. So to begin to examine this process in that kind of I'm crawling all over with snakes sort of way, with what is that feeling?
Mm-hmm.
What is that feeling? When does it start? How does it build? When does it die down? What are all of the circumstances that I can identify around this particular set of sensations?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I hope this gentleman will call us back and let us know.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And as you were talking about that, I have the image of a scientist or a researcher, you know, who's going after this question, and there's no particular judgment or, you know, retributions about what's going to be found.
Right. Right. I just want to know the answer.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to find this out. You know, the thing that we struggle with so much as conditioned human beings is that we take everything so personally.
Yeah.
So it means something about me that I have these sensations in my body.
Yes.
And it's so regrettable. It just keeps us stuck.
Yes.
Because it's not personal. They're sensations in a body.
Yes.
And if we can be present to them and open, then we can see what this is, what's causing this, how does this happen, and then we can have a relationship with it that allows us to be as fully open and present and alive as it's possible for us to be, rather than living this kind of fearful half-life, because if I'm really here, I'm going to find out something that I don't want to know.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just thinking as you were talking there, I have some quotes in front of me about fear. And this is from Marie Curie, the scientist in France, I believe. Mm-hmm. That nothing in life is to be feared, it is only to be understood.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's what you're pointing at there.
Yes, yes, that it's all an opportunity to be with.
Yes, yes.
But we take it personally. You know, our conditioning says, oh no, avoid that, don't look at that, you don't want to know about that. There's something wrong with you. You shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't be that way. And so we hide out from ourselves. And, of course, hiding out from ourselves is hiding out from life.
Absolutely.
So to, you know, again, that you must become as little children, that to be in that attitude of mind, to be in relationship with life in such a way that it's all interesting. It's all fascinating. It's all exciting. It's all wonderful. It doesn't have anything to do with me. It's not making any kind of statement about me. The only judgment that there is in life is from our own conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were talking earlier about sensation, I'm reminded of the five steps that you often talk about.
Yes.
Of movement.
First there's movement.
Yes.
Then sensation.
Yes.
We have a label, a thought, a story that goes with that, what it means.
Yes.
And then, of course, we have an emotional reaction. How can we not when it's whatever this is so filled with meaning?
Yes.
And then we have a behavior because we're always trying to survive everything. You know, that old... whatever it is, life is not a problem to be solved, it's an adventure to be lived, or however that
uh-huh.
notion goes.
Yes.
And we have to be told that because we certainly do not approach life as this wonderful gift, this opportunity, this adventure that we're on. It's there's something wrong. We've got to get over it, figure it out, feel bad about it, somehow survive it.
Yes.
And then, you know, then we wonder why we're not happier, why we're not more joyful. And yeah, and then as Claire was talking about, you know, so we're caught in this, I know there's something wrong with me, I don't know what it is, I'm just going to stick my head in the sand and hope I never have to find out what. And then we get beaten up with that. It's like, we, you know, we just can't win for losing, as they say.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. And Sherry, what often brings me home is this notion that my life is finite. It's going to end. I don't know when it's
yes.
going to end.
Yeah.
And I want to have the best time while I'm here.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I was talking with somebody recently whose partner was among those lost on September 11th.
Uh-huh.
And that, it, and we all know this from following it, and we know it from other things. That was just such a powerful example of you go off to work one day and mm-hmm. you never come home.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this particular. She had a significant birthday, and he had planned this extraordinary trip for her. Just. Very shortly before it happened.
Uh-huh.
And what she was talking about was how grateful she was that they didn't wait,
yes.
that they didn't put it off because there isn't enough money now or there isn't
uh-huh.
enough time or I need to be at work or whatever it was. It was this extraordinary trip, this time that they had together, and then he was gone.
Uh-huh.
So... we don't know, and we keep living our lives as if we have forever,
yes.
and we don't.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And for me, that can take away some of the anxiety or fear about whatever I'm doing or doing something new, moving in a new direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just makes you want to be three, doesn't it? Just have it all, experience it all, just be as... open-minded and open-hearted and open-armed as we can possibly be as we move through life.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Run around, jump
off the wall. Having it all. Run around
have
with?
Have it all.
Yeah.
Yes. Sherry, we are close to the end of our hour here.
Well, time flies.
Time does
fly. In the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night.
I'm telling you, all those people, all those retreatants just went on to bed. As if, what they said is, well, why sit up? We only get to hear one half the conversation.
Oh, that's right. I guess no speakerphone there. So.
That's right.
Yes.
Lucky to have a phone here.
Absolutely, and a functioning one at that.
And a functioning one. Last week, we weren't so lucky, were we?
No, we tried.
Yeah, we did.
We tried. Yes.
Well, it's wonderful having this opportunity to talk with you and with the folks who called in, and please send along my thanks to those wonderful people there in the studio with you making this happen. I'm eager to be with them next week.
Oh, that's great. Sherry, I'm very grateful for your efforts to be on the show here and stay up in the middle
my
of the night.
My pleasure.
That's really wonderful.
Great pleasure.
Yes. I'd like to thank Lori and Jay, all of our callers and listeners, for joining us today. Archives of today's show and all previous shows are available on Sherry's website. That's sherryhuber.com, spelled CHERIHUBER.com. Sherry, would you like to take 30 seconds and talk about the Bridge Walk coming up?
Oh, October 25th, Saturday.
Yes.
Yes, we're going to get our friends and family to either come with us and join us or send in contributions for our efforts. And we'll all get together about 9 o'clock in the morning, is it?
Yes, it
well,
is.
Well, the information I know is on the website.
Yes, livingcompassion.org.
Livingcompassion.org?
Yes.
And we get together in the morning and do a little yoga and have some tea and bagels and walk across the bridge and have a lunch together and walk back and make a lot of money that we can use to help the folks in Africa who are struggling right now.
Yes. So this walk is to support the Zimbabwe Vulnerable Children's Project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And I always want to promise a beautiful sunny day, but
who knows? Who knows?
Who knows?
But we're going to go regardless.
Rain or shine.
Rain or shine. If it's raining, we'll just put up our umbrellas and take a walk in the rain.
Sounds good.
Yeah, together it should be fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry.
Thank you, sir.
Coming up next.
Talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sherry. Coming up next, we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. She's here right now picking out some great world music. And then at 8 p.m., we have a new show, CW. So stay tuned to KZSU Stanford.